You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss.
March can be won, can be won. Many stones can form an arch. Singly done, singly done. And by union, what we will can be accomplished still. Drops of water turn a mill. Singly done, singly done.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any unions involved. And welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. I'm Judy Ansel. Tonight's show is being underwritten by Painters and Allied Trades District Council 3 and Blake and Ulig, PA. The International Union of Painters and Allied Trades District Council No. 3, fighting for working families since 1916. And since 1972, Blake and Ulig has prided itself on providing comprehensive legal representation to labor organizations and their affiliated benefit funds on a local, regional, and national basis. And the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI thank our underwriters for their support. On tonight's show, the Kansas City labor community lost Herb Johnson on October 18th. Herb's life was a nonstop fight for the rights of working people, from his early days with the machinists at TWA to his last role building the Alliance for Retired Americans. In between, he held the number two post with the Missouri AFL-CIO, fighting bills in the legislature aimed at fleecing workers. On tonight's show, Herb's union friends will pay tribute with lots of good stories. In the news, guess who just got added to the local list of union busters? And why were 150 people rallying at City Hall this morning? Our feature at the end of the show is Safety First with Mary Aereo. She'll be talking about a watchdog group which files brief supporting COVID-19 emergency standard, about OSHA, which is urging Midwest employers to emphasize electrical safety, and holiday book shopping from the Confined Space blog. And now for the news. Now for the news from our side, December 2nd, 2021. Several months ago, the news from our side covered the complaints by a former employee of the Missouri Democratic Party who had filed unfair labor practice charges with the National Labor Relations Board. As a result, the NLRB issued a complaint against the Missouri Dems. Then, the party claimed it is exempt from labor law coverage and presumably free to bust unions because of its First Amendment rights. Needless to say, this stance doesn't go down well with labor unions, who are major donors to the Dems. And indeed, the Missouri Dems have reached a settlement in the NLRB case with the former employee who had filed the charges. Party Chairman Michael Butler said, "We wish this situation never came to be, but we are satisfied with the agreement. Organized labor has been a major part of my life and the backbone of America. The Missouri Democratic Party has always been and will continue to be fervent union supporters."
So as one progressive Missouri organization drops off the union buster list, another has unfortunately joined. That's the Missouri ACLU, who this week fired their union chair, Justin Gaston. The union, the United Media Guild, has been in negotiations for their first contract for months. It had already filed unfair labor practice charges against the Missouri ACLU for unilaterally changing jobs of its members without consulting the union. Shannon Duffy of the United Media Guild, who has organized a number of newspapers, including the Kansas City Star and nonprofits, said that he's never had a unit chair fired in the middle of negotiations. This is a first.
Monday, Director of Region 10 of the National Labor Relations Board ordered a second union election for workers at the Amazon Fulfillment Center in Bessemer, Alabama. The union was attempting to gain certification as their representatives, the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union, or the RWDSU, had objected to Amazon's conduct during the first union election last spring. RWDSU President Stuart Applebaum said, "Today's decision confirms what we were saying all along, that Amazon's intimidation and interference prevented workers from having a fair say in whether they wanted a union in their workplace. A big issue was a mailbox Amazon got the U.S. Postal Service to install at the front door where workers could deposit their mail ballots. It was unclear when the second election will take place." In other news, United Auto Workers have voted for a democracy in a referendum on whether they should be allowed direct election of their officers rather than through delegates at the National Union Convention. Detroit News called the vote a major rebuke from the rank-and-file members of union leadership that has been plagued by corruption scandal. The movement for direct elections was led by UAWD, or Unite All Workers for Democracy. This change makes it possible, but not certain, that so-called administrative caucus, which has run the union for 70 years since the days of Walter Reuther, could be replaced by leaders more representative of the union's rank and file. Only 140,586 out of a million members voted, and the direct election won by 64% of the vote.
This morning, Kansas City Casey Tenants, along with the Heartland Center for Jobs and Freedom and the Missouri Workers Center, rallied in front of Kansas City, Missouri City Hall and held a press conference to announce that Councilwoman Andrea Bau would introduce the Tenants' Right to Counsel Ordinance 211067 today to the City Council. Tenants' Right to Counsel is the guaranteed right to legal representation in all landlord-tenant cases. 12 cities and 3 cases have now enacted Tenants' Right to Counsel. In places where right to counsel is the law, eviction filings have decreased, tenants have stayed in their homes, and governments have saved money. Currently, almost half of Kansas City residents are tenants, and so many are just one sick kid or car breakdown away from eviction. Since 2014, only 3% of tenants in eviction cases had lawyers to represent them. Almost all lose without a lawyer and get evicted. We talked to Ernesta Colborn, a KC Tenants leader who spoke at the rally. She was there with her daughter in a stroller. We asked her why KC Tenants was there in front of City Hall.
We are here for guaranteed right to counsel for eviction court.
What difference does it make to have guaranteed representation?
It makes a lot of difference. One, it gives you a peace of mind because you're not alone. And two, it gives you the time that you need to gather yourself and prepare for whatever comes next, whether you're staying in your home or having to find somewhere else to go.
And what does a lawyer do that you can't do for yourself?
A lawyer is able to talk in court because when you go to court and represent yourself, you really don't get any time to explain anything. But if you have a lawyer with you, you get that time.
And does that make for a different outcome?
Yes, it does. Because the simple fact that people are able to tell their stories without being judged or mistreated just because of the situation that they're in.
Have you had that kind of experience yourself?
Yes, I have. I've had many experiences that way. I've been represented in court with an attorney, and then there's a couple of times where I haven't. And the outcome with being represented, it was a better one, even though I still had to move, but I did it in my time and not the landlord's time.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The news tonight was read by Judy Ansel, Judy Morgan, Tom Gepkin, and I'm Jen Zaman.
Hey now, you better listen to me, every one of you. We've got a lot of work to do. Forget about your women and that water can. Today you're working for the man. pick up your feet. We've got a deadline to meet. I'm gonna see you make it on time. Oh, don't relax. I want elbows and backs. I wanna see everybody from behind. 'Cause you're working for the man. You're working for the man. You gotta make him a hand. You're working for the man. So I'm picking him up and I'm laying him down. I believe he's gonna work me into the ground. I pull to the left, I heave to the right. I ought to kill him, but it wouldn't be right. 'Cause I'm working for the man. I'm working for the man. I gotta make him a hand. I'm working for the man. Well, the boss man's daughter sneaks in me water every time her daddy's down the line. She says, meet me tonight.
I'm Judy Morgan, President Emeritus of the American Federation of Teachers, Local 691, a Missouri, former Missouri State Rep for the 24th District. I'll be co-hosting this show this evening with Tom Gepkin, President of the Communication Workers of America, Local 6360. The labor community did experience an immense loss on October 18, 2021, when our beloved friend Herb Johnson passed away at the age of 78. A highly respected union leader, Herb Johnson was a member of the former Machinist Lodge 1650 in Kansas City. He held many positions in that local, including president. From 1997 to 2013, Herb served as secretary-treasurer of the Missouri AFL-CIO. In that position, Herb successfully lobbied the legislature for pro-labor legislation and against anti-union bills like the so-called Right to Work. In the 1970s, Herb was one of the driving forces behind the formation of the Right to Truth Labor Media Breakfast, which fostered a positive relationship between labor media and unions in the Kansas City area. Even after he retired in 2013, Herb continued his dedication to the union cause as vice president of the Missouri Alliance for Retired Americans. Herb leaves behind his loving wife, Rosalyn, 5 children, 12 grandchildren, and 5 great-grandchildren. Tonight, we pay tribute to Herb Johnson, a man who selflessly and tirelessly dedicated his life to his union brothers and sisters and all working families and their friends.
On tonight's show, we'll hear from a wide range of Herb's friends and colleagues. We have Gordon Clark, Mike Lewis, John Boyd, Becky Caper, Bill Finkel, Judy Ansel, and Judy Morgan. These friends will provide stories they remember of their time with Herb, beginning with the early years to the things he did in retirement. He was truly union his whole life. And this summer during History Month, or Labor History Month, I asked Herb to give a 2-minute talk on the TWA history. If you can know Herb, 2 minutes was pretty tough to do, but we were able to do it, and so we're going to listen to that, and then we'll get things started.
This Labor History segment has been brought to you by the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI. On tonight's Labor Minute, past Secretary Treasurer of the Missouri AFL-CIO and past President of Machinist Local 1650, Herb Johnson, will share with us Kansas City's aviation history.
Thank you, Tom. Well, Kansas City has a place in aviation history because of TWA, our hometown airline that was founded here in 1925, an airline that grew up to be Kansas City's largest private employer in the 1970s and 80s. TWA was owned, as many know, by Howard Hughes, the industrialist, for many years, and many innovative things took place during his ownership. He was finally forced out of ownership of the carrier in the 1960s, right after the jet age had begun with the 707 and so on and so forth. And then came diversification with the success of the carrier. They created a holding company called TWC, where they acquired many other companies. They also acquired at that same time management that did not have an airline background. That was not good for business of the airline. In any case, at the same time, deregulation come along very shortly thereafter, and that, of course, put all of the legacy carriers in difficulty of trying to compete with new, cheap competitors, upstart airlines that caused the mergers, the bankruptcies, and the takeovers, eventually leading to, in our case, Icon dismemberment, and finally the ESOP, or the Employee Stock Option effort to rebuild the carrier. It ended in 2001 with the merger with American Airlines, our historical competitor. There's more information like this at the History Museum located at 10 Richards Road at the north end of the Buck O'Neill Bridge. It's a fascinating history of Kansas City and the airline industry.
This labor history segment has been brought to you by the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI.
The first person who will pay tribute to Herb tonight is Gordon Clark. Gordon and I go back a long ways. We were local presidents of our unions together for a number of years, and we had many wonderful experiences together working on behalf of our members. Gordon knew Herb when Herb served as president of the Machinist Local 1650, and they both went through the Eastern Airlines strike together in 1989. Gordon's going to tell us about his experiences with Herb as a member of the his local union. Hi, Gordon. Welcome to Heartland Labor Forum.
Hi, Judy. Thanks so much for having me. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. We just want to hear about Herb and his early days in the union and that strike and what he meant to you.
Yeah, well, I started working for TWA in 1986, and so it took me a couple years to really understand the union and what was going on. My dad was a steel worker and a IAM member for Honeywell, and so I was familiar with unions, but Herb and Keith, his vice president, really took me under their wing early on, and I became a union steward in 1990. So 89 was my first real experience with labor strife and understanding what what it was all about and the leadership that it took to get us in those kind of situations. So Herb and Keith both were very instrumental in driving the Eastern strike and the all the perils that went along with that. So the story that I wanted to tell everyone was in 89, we were all walking picket at the airport at Kansas City International, and Herb had a bullhorn and was really, had the crowd riled up. We were really doing our best to support the Eastern folks and all the things that they were going through and the ultimate demise of the airline. But Herb had a bullhorn, and somehow, an Eastern airplane was coming into the terminal, and somebody said there's a bomb on the airplane. And so Herb, with the bullhorn, started, just carrying that theme on. Well, the police officers and people there really got disturbed by that. So they arrested Herb, and before anybody could do anything, they had him in the paddy wagon and hauled off to jail. And so what I found out here in the last few days in my investigation, that he spent the night in jail in general population, and actually to get through the morning until the lawyers could get him bailed out, he sacrificed his breakfast to one of the inmates there that he thought was a good idea to help him, get through the morning and get out of jail. So Herb was an exceptional leader and a passionate leader, and he instilled those kind of things in me and my career and what I ultimately ended up doing with the transport workers and Local 530. And one of the biggest things I think with union leaders, if you don't have the support of the membership, you're not going to get very far. But with over 6,000 members in the early 70s and the early 80s at TWA at the overhaul base, Herb had exceptional and unconditional support from the membership. And if there was ever anything that came down the line that we needed to support and back up what was going on at the overhaul base. We knew Herb was a good leader, and he took care of the membership like nobody I've seen since. And he was an exceptional, passionate leader, like I said, and people really appreciated that. And I tried to carry that on when I became president. And, you know, we really suffered through some of the toughest times in the airline industry after deregulation. And it was always about concessions. It was giving up benefits. It was the airline is in peril. And we're still experiencing all that today. And this is the first contract last year that I felt like I really got a substantial increase in pay. So the difficulties that we went through and the strife we had with management and TWA over the years, from Howard Hughes right up to you know, when American took over, it took tremendous leadership, and I can't express how important that is in the labor movement to have a leader like Herb was. And so when American took over, Herb was still active and retired, and then subsequently retired, but he left me with a lot of knowledge and a lot of great experience to carry on and take care of the members as we went through all the perils of closing down the overhaul base and subsequently becoming American Airlines.
Gordon, thanks so much. I had never heard that story about Herb going to jail and giving up his breakfast for another person who is there with him, but that sounds just like the Herb we all know and love, because it wasn't just his union friends. He wanted to take care of everybody. So thank you so much. You're listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, and tonight we're paying a tribute to our good friend Herb Johnson. Next, we're going to talk to Mike Lewis. He's the recently retired president of the Missouri AFL-CIO, a leader who successfully fought the right to work in Missouri in 2018. And he spent time with Herb when Herb was secretary-treasurer of the Missouri AFL-CIO. And Mike's going to talk to us about Herb's time. He spent quite a bit of time there, and Herb and Mike's going to talk to us about that.
Thanks, Judy. And it's good to see and hear everybody, my friends that I haven't seen in a while. Herb was just a genuine gentleman when he had to be, and he was a genuine pain to legislators when he had to be. There's no question about that. I first met Herb back at Missouri State Council meetings strictly for the Machinist Union. We were both delegates from our locals to there, and when we attend the state council meetings, our job was to lobby on certain issues. And Herb thought that was the biggest waste of GD time that he had ever spent, because lobbying in those days simply meant we're going to go visit our friends, because our friends were in the majority of everything. So we'd go to possibly floor leader Pat Hickey's office, or anywhere we knew there was beer, Herb, that's who go visit and throw back a few cold ones. But when things change, and Herb became the secretary treasurer of the Missouri State Council, and it was his duty to make sure the operations of union lobbying ran smoothly and we were doing our jobs. Under Herb, we saw major changes. We saw changes from the Senate. We lost the Senate to some unfriendlies, and we no longer had the majority there, which Herb predicted. And then in 2002, things really went to hell in a handbasket. We lost the House as well. And we were running out of friends, and luckily we had Governor Jay Nixon around for
for a few more years to help us, which, by the way, one of his appointments to a court today or yesterday, I don't know. I'm retired. I get my days mixed.
But, I know what you mean.
a judge ruled that the new right-to-work language that's trying to be put on the ballot by a group of outsiders outside of Missouri. Everybody seems to know what's best for us, except us, I guess. But one of Jay's appointments to a judge found that the language was unacceptable, rewrote the language, which is a little more fair and a little more easy to understand. So, you know, those were important days, and Herb had a handle in all of that. And sometimes, you know, having a handle on things is different than having a handle to stir the pot with. Is that's one of Herb's sayings. You know, it's better to have a handle that people listen to instead of one that just constantly stirs. So he was a pleasure to work with. You know, we would get into situations where there were conflicts between unions on certain legislation. And, you know, the same thing wasn't as important to every single union. The building trades, the industrial unions, the teachers union, the service employees, the list goes on and on of how there could be major differences in what you thought was important to you. And Herb did one hell of a job of prioritizing legislation and working hard to keep everybody happy. That was probably one of the things that about the job as Secretary Treasurer that Herb had, and when I took over as Secretary Treasurer and tried to follow in his footsteps, and I gotta admit, I only tried. I never got to where he got. He knew when to just say uncle, and he knew when to keep fighting and hold on to a bone like a bulldog. And he would do that. There's no question about it. And he also knew when it was time to call the lawyers. And I know you're going to hear from one of our best lawyers that the AFL-CIO has ever had shortly. And I think he will concur that Herb was just one hell of a fighter for the working people of the state of Missouri, not just the union people, but for all working people.
You know, I appreciate, Mike, what you said about Herb when the House and Senate changed from Democratic control to Republican control. And I remember he told me that it just about killed him, but he knew he'd have to work across the aisle now. And you're right, he did it. It wasn't something he necessarily wanted to do, but he knew it was best for his members. And so he did that. So I really appreciated you talking about that. Thank you.
Yeah, that was one of probably the things he hated most was
right.
Having to walk in and beg for something from people who didn't care about working people.
Right. I think we're going to go ahead and take a little break and have a public service announcement, and then we'll be back with our lawyer friend.
Tune in on the first Thursday of every month at 7 p.m. for Next Step Forward, a program highlighting millennials in the KC Metro that are using their talents, businesses, and activism to educate and uplift their communities. Join us for fresh insights, candid conversations, and interviews that will make you think. If you want to learn, laugh, and be empowered, this is the show for you. Join me, Jasmine Jones, every first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. right here on KKFI.
KKFI is the Kansas City area's independent, non-commercial, community radio station. We seek to stimulate, educate, and entertain our audience, to reflect the diversity of the local and world community, and to provide a channel for individuals and groups, issues and music that have been overlooked, suppressed, or underrepresented by other media. And that is the KKFI mission statement. Thank you for listening.
As an attorney with Boyd, Kenter, Thomas, and Parrish, he's a great friend to labor. And John is going to share a few stories about Herb. He said there might be some he might not share, but he will share some others that are okay for radio. So thank you, John.
Thank you, Judy. It's a pleasure to be here. And certainly, it's wonderful to see
everyone's faces, even if it is by Zoom. Herb taught lessons, whether he intended to or not. To amplify on what Gordon said about the arrest, my first law partner did a lot of work for the machinists, 1650, and introduced me to Herb and said, you'll meet a lot of labor lawyers, or rather labor leaders over your career, but you're going to have to look long and hard to find one as good as this man. He's willing to go to jail for his membership. So he taught me a lesson the first time I met him. The second lesson, many of you know that Herb was a Chiefs fan. He was a diehard fan. He would sit out in Arrowhead when it was cold, snowy, and he might be the only person in the upper deck. They would close the upper deck and move them down. And through thick and thin, there was Herb. But we had a bet that I lost, and so I arranged, because of we represent the NFL Players Union, I arranged to get Herb down on the field before the game started. And so we had a great time. Herb was grinning from ear to ear, and he saw players. He engaged some. He got to talk briefly to Marty, and he was really enjoying himself. Well, it was time for us to leave, and so we were being escorted through a tunnel in which the cheerleaders were getting ready. They were stretching, tucking, crimping, and whatever it is that they do. And suddenly, I was walking ahead of Herb instead of beside him. And he was kind of dawdling along, and he whispered, walk slowly. And I had an old 35 millimeter camera, and he says, start taking pictures. So I started with this thing draped around my neck and it's going click, click, click. Well, that finally gave us away, and our escort came back for us and had us removed. I think it was the third quarter before that grin on Herb's face eased away. Lesson learned was take advantage of your opportunities. The second one, or the other lesson, was we were in San Francisco. Herb and Roz were there with hundreds of labor leaders from across the country for a meeting a few days before the annual meeting of the American Legislative Exchange Council. And I was there for a National Tri Lawyers Convention, and I was an officer in that group. So a few of us got together with Herb and some of the other labor leaders for a pub crawl. And their money wasn't good that night, apparently, and so we treated them. And so the next day, Herb invites us to join him and several of my lawyer colleagues for a cocktail reception. It was a nice little thank you. Well, after consuming some cocktails near the close of that function, he invited us to join his group for dinner and drinks at an exclusive Italian restaurant where they had reservations. Then I asked him, well, how many of my colleagues do you suggest that I invite? And Herb said, as many as they can show up. So what started for a reservation of about 20 or 25 labor leaders and spouses turned into a group of over 50 at the door of the restaurant. The maitre d' was impeccably dressed in his tux, and when he saw the size of our group, the frown on his face as he began talking with Herb indicated that there was indeed a problem. As it developed, Herb and the state fed presidents that were with him from Nebraska and North Dakota engaged this maitre d' in a heated exchange. This maitre d' may have been 5 feet tall, and he was waving his arms in a no-way message. So Herb was embarrassed, and he retreated, and he told me what was going on. I asked him if he'd mind if I'd speak with that maitre d' alone, and I did. And when I shook the maitre d's hand with a folded picture of a former Civil War veteran general who was also a president, strangely, he snapped his fingers, and we all got seated. So we had a great night. Roz was able to make the order. The meal was terrific, and the bill was presented, and Herb said, John, Huey, who was Hugh McVeigh, will kill me if I turn this bill in. Will you bail me out? So three of us lawyers picked up the tab for over 50-some people, wine, alcohol, food. So the lesson learned, don't accept the dinner invitation from Herb without asking first if you or Mike Lewis had okayed it. I really love the man. He was a great loss to our community, and I'm sad.
Yeah, and it was always hard to say no to Herb, wasn't it, John?
It was rare that we did.
Yeah, right, exactly. Thank you so much. Tom's going to take over now.
Next up to discuss is Becky Caper. She is the office manager of the Kansas City AFL-CIO, and she is what makes everything work here in Kansas City. So, Becky, take it away. And you're on mute.
I know. I'm. It's very unusual for me not to be talking. But, Herb, oh my gosh. And thank you for the compliment, Tom. I'm at a loss for words, but listening to John and Mike and Gordon is all of the reasons why when I was presented with helping with the ARA here on the Kansas City side, that I said yes. Had I known what it was really going to entail, a few trips to Jeff City with Herb and Bill Finkel, no less. And there was a couple of times that, you know, I learned a lot from Herb. He took and he embraced me, or as Gordon said, he took me under his wing. Herb always told me, there is no stupid question. There is no stupid action. You roll with what you feel.
Hey, and Becky, for our audience, you had said ARA. Would you tell our audience what the ARA is?
Excuse me. That's the Alliance for Retired Americans. And I was very instrumental in helping, and I will continue that role if I am still able and asked to do so here on the Kansas City side. But Herb was very, he and I would be on the same page. We did some mailers. He needed some contacts. He always asked my opinion, which to me is a great honor to have a man that I felt was so much more powerful and knowledgeable and engaged than I was. But he never made me feel I'm less than anyone else in the room, I guess is that what I'm trying to say. Herb was never shy to invite me to do anything. Rather, you know, it was knocking doors. It was learning the facts behind the fight and knowing. And that, to me, was huge. And it's made me who I am and made me appreciate a lot more about where we've been and where we've come from.
Yeah, along those lines, Herb was more than willing to share his knowledge, and the way that he presented it, it was you wanted to know more.
Absolutely. And there was times when he probably told me things that I'm like, whoa, this just is over my head. But it was a wealth of knowledge that I've never, and I will continue to never, cease to absorb, because it's that important. You have to know where you came from when you're trying to get somewhere. And if you can't get to the root of it, and that's something that Herb was very, very, very good at.
Well, thank you, Becky. Thanks for that contribution. Just another example of how Herb helped people everywhere he turned.
Absolutely.
Next up is Bill Finkel. He is Alliance for Retired Americans. He knew Herb in the retirement stage and knew him. They would go to the 40 Club, sit at the same table, enjoy fried chicken. And so, Herb, take it away.
I'm on the air. I take it?
Yes, sir.
Well, you know, and I don't want to get emotional or teary-eyed because I'm still shook up over this, believe me, and my wife knows that too. I mean, I went that Monday and got the Slacker Award from the Fox, and then I heard what happened. But I think so much how much I love that guy. And I'll never forget when I used to drive him, and he'd knock doors. And believe me, he was great about that. And we were known as Fat Man and Robin. And we would go to any different neighborhoods on Proposition A and then for candidates. And we went out and met Brian Simmons out at 36th and Broadway. And we went in there to get some stuff for Proposition A. And Brian says, do you guys have the minivan? And Herb says, well, no, we got Bill's pickup truck because we didn't know what the minivan was. And we would knock doors. He was remarkable. And talking about fried chicken, I'll never forget in the Jefferson City Airport, he loved that fried chicken. It was all you could eat for about $9 or $10. And Becky remembers this. And the last time we were there, we had a waitress, and it was getting close to closing time, and she had red hair, and Herb could eat 9 pieces of fried chicken, and he kept saying, "Hey, Red, more chicken. Hey, Red, more chicken." And finally, she come over, and she said, her name was not Red, and she said, "The kitchen's shutting down. There's no more chicken." But God knows how much it was working with him. And just, you know, I had Sherry Chaney and I had Gerald Randall as mentors. But he topped the cake. What you could listen to him. Yeah, and I say this about people. He was like E.F. Hutton. You listened. Mm-hmm. You listened to what that man said. And I'll never forget all the stuff that that I learned from him. But I really I miss him very much. But and I know I'm getting emotional now, but that's what I think about. He was one of the greatest about working people and helping families and stuff like that. So that's my great memories of him. And I talked to Brian Simmons about that last Saturday. Friday I had lunch with him. He was here in town and we talked about Herb. And Lord, how we miss him.
Yes, sir. He probably can't be replaced.
No.
Well, thank you, Herb. Sure appreciate, or thank you, Bill. Sure appreciate what you have to say. We have about 7 minutes, 6.5 minutes left, so I'm going to turn this over to the two Judys.
Okay, so it's the Judy and Judy show again.
Judy A and Judy M.
Yeah. Well, I got a text from Scott Mackey, who's with the Mail Handlers Union, and he said, "I knew Herb Johnson from the Labor Media Breakfast. I showed up not hardly knowing anybody. He was always very encouraging. Such a nice guy." And that's true. And let me say something about the Labor Media Breakfast, because Herb was an absolute regular there. He totally believed that labor needed to search out and develop relationships with the media. Otherwise, we were going to get a bad rap. And both Herb and Keith Nelson were very, very important in keeping the Labor Media Breakfast going to this day. It started, oh my gosh, before I became a labor educator, which was 1989. It was already going. It was called the Right to Truth Committee, and it's still going on. And helped really develop much better relations with the media in Kansas City and much better coverage as a result. So I knew Herb first because he was on the advisory board for the Institute for Labor Studies, and he was a big supporter of labor education, and I really treasured that always in him. He knew he wasn't afraid of education. You know, some union leaders are afraid of education. They think, you know, you educate a member and he's going to run against me. Herb never had that fear. Herb always supported getting more money for the program. Yes. And so I really appreciated that about him. And, you know, I'll turn it over to you, Judy, and you want to share some memories, too?
Sure.
I could keep going, but go on.
Well, if I have any time left, you can take it. I will defer to you. I met Herb when I was president of the AFT Local 691, and we were heading into a terrible situation in the legislature where they were trying to take the Kansas City School District over, and our union was opposed to it, the school district was opposed to it, and it really was a very tough situation, and it was very much nip and tuck the entire session, but Herb was always there, and he supported me through that. And what Mike said about sometimes there were conflicting interests of unions, I think Herb decided that even if maybe some other unions might not have been on our side, he was going to be with the teachers because he really, really cared about teachers. So I really appreciated that about Herb. And then also, I want to say this, Herb just cared so much about others. And this, I was on the Alliance for Retired Americans with him recently, and just had started as a member of the board there. I think we're having a little technical difficulty we're trying to get through here. But anyway, Herb was trying to organize a meeting of the local Kansas City community of the Alliance for Retired Americans, those of us who were on the board. And we'd gotten a text from him that morning, the morning he passed away. He texted us and said he'd like to get together for a meeting. He was always cared about everybody. And I talked to his wife, and he went out for a walk after that text, and that's when he passed away. Mm-hmm. So it was like Herb was actually doing the union work, fighting for families, labor people, until right before he passed away. So that just, to me, says everything about Herb and how much he cared about all of us. And like many of you have said, I'm sad. And some of you know I lost my husband about a year ago. And, you know, he was a great guy, and Herb was a great guy. And just, it's just been a tough year, and Herb will be very much missed. So, Judy, if you want to add something else.
Yeah. What I want to add was that I think Herb, as a union leader, was a really great tactician. And we just played last week the show we did with Herb and Gordon about the demise of the TWA maintenance base and the American takeover. It was done right at the closing when Gordon was about to go to Dallas to work for American. And, you know, what had been an employer of about 6,000 to 7,000 people at one time, you know, closed, and those jobs were no more. IAM 1650 was one of the really great unions in Kansas City.
Yeah.
The solidarity that they had in that union, the union culture of really standing up for each other and fighting back against the corporate raiders, namely Carl Icahn, who destroyed TWA, was really awesome. And as a union leader, Herb was just a great tactician. He told a story on that show about early on in the late 60s when they had a strike during a work-to-rule campaign. You know, unions have pretty much forgotten about work-to-rule campaigns over the last 20, 30 years and how powerful they are as far as putting pressure on management. And this was a fight in order to get pensions. And they won it by not striking outside, they struck inside. And then again against Carl Icahn, they did the same thing, essentially, in order to try to stop the destruction of TWA. And Herb, and with him Keith Nelson, were really masters at mobilizing their members and building unity among the members. And that's something I think that every labor union member should learn from our past and from our history. So my great tribute to Herb, aside from the fact that he was an incredibly generous guy, was that he was really a model union leader. So that's what I have to say.
And just one more thing. I remember reading this quote that said, 80% of life is showing up. And that's what Herb did. He showed up and showed up and showed up for all of us. And Herb, we love you. We miss you and hope to see you one day.
Thank you. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming on to the Heartland Labor Forum. We heard some really great stories. I can't tell you how much I appreciate all of this show. It was a fun show to do. Nice to hear these stories. And appreciate every single one of you.
Working at this job is dirty and dangerous, and I'm taking risks anyway. Oh, if I had the time and the proper equipment, I could do my job safely each day. Everybody here says there's sickness or safety, and I'm not here to say that they lie. I'm saying we just
Hello, this is Mary Ario for Safety First. First, Watchdog Group files brief supporting COVID-19 emergency temporary standard from www.safetyandhealthmagazine.com for December 1st. Public Citizen has filed a friend of the court brief with the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals on behalf of three former OSHA administrators, offering support for the agency's emergency temporary standard on COVID-19 vaccination, testing, and masking. Among the former agency heads is Gerard Scannell, who filled the role during the George H.W. Bush administration. The others are Charles Jeffries and OSHA's longest-serving Assistant Secretary, Dr. David Michaels. The implementation and enforcement of the ETS was halted by the New Orleans-based Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in a decision handed down on November 12th. Among other considerations, the judges ruled that the promulgation of the ETS grossly exceeds OSHA's statutory authority. They contend the Occupational Safety and Health Act of 1970 was not intended for OSHA to make sweeping pronouncements on matters of public health. The Sixth Circuit, based in Cincinnati, will consider a consolidated challenge to the ETS in the near future. In a November 30th press release, Public Citizen contends the Fifth Circuit decision is contrary to the plain language of the OSHA Act, which gives OSHA broad authority to prevent workplace illnesses and diseases caused by exposure to harmful physical agents, including viruses. OSHA published the ETS in the November 5th Federal Register, giving employers with 100-plus employees 30 days to develop, implement, and enforce a mandatory COVID-19 vaccination policy or provide a policy that gives workers the choice to get vaccinated or undergo weekly COVID-19 testing. Next, the U.S. Department of Labor urges Midwest employers to emphasize electrical safety. From www.osha.gov, news release for November 9th. Electrical hazards killed 4 workers in Missouri and Kansas in 5 months in 2021. In Missouri, a 40-year-old electrical contractor replacing light fixtures in Sedalia and a 22-year-old worker cleaning a Higbee pig barn with a pressure washer. In Wichita, Kansas, a 41-year-old doing heating and air conditioning work and a 35-year-old electrical contractor climbing a pole in Lawrence, Kansas. Their stories and circumstances may differ, but the cause of death is the same, electrocution. While OSHA continues its investigations, the agency is alerting all employers to review safe electrical work practices with their employees in response to a nationwide increase in workplace deaths by electrocution. Recent tragedies in Missouri and Kansas are reminders of the danger of electrical exposure in the workplace, said OSHA Acting Regional Administrator Billy Kaiser in Kansas City, Missouri. OSHA's electrical standards are designed to protect employees from electrical shock and electrocution. Employers should implement safety and health programs and are required to train workers on identifying hazards and use required protective measures to ensure all employees end each workday safely. OSHA resources on electrical safety hazards can be found at www.osha.gov, safety and health topics, and electrical. Finally, holiday book shopping from the Confined Space blog at jordanbarab.com/confinedspace for November 29th. If you can't find Confined Space holiday book selections locally, they're available online at Paul's Books, the link located on the Confined Space blog. Paul's Books is one of the few unionized bookstores in the U.S. A few suggestions from Jordan Barab include Soul Full of Coal Dust, the true story of an epic battle for justice by journalist Chris Hamby, about how the coal industry cheated thousands of suffering miners out of their black lung compensation benefits. Next, The Triumph of Doubt, Dark Money and the Science of Deception by Dr. David Michaels, describes campaigns by chemical companies to sow doubt in the science behind regulations to protect workers and communities. And an oldie but goodie, The Man Who Hated Work and Loved Labor, The Life and Times of Tony Mazzocchi by Les Leopold. A must-read, not only to understand the growth of the workplace safety and health movement in this country, but to learn about one of the 20th century America's most dynamic labor, environmental, and workplace safety leaders. There are many other suggestions, including those by commenters. Wishing everyone a safe and healthy holiday season, this is Mary Ario for Safety First.
And this is Judy Ansel with the Heartland Labor Forum calendar. The American Postal Workers Union is still collecting toys for tots, and you can drop off toys between November 15th and December 13th. So you got a little over a week to do this, actually almost 2 weeks. And you go to 3824 East 16th Street, Kansas City, Missouri, 64127. That's the APWU Union Hall. They want unwrapped toys. Look for the barrel to put them in. The UU Forum is this Sunday is having a talk by attorney Bob I on the assault on women's reproductive rights. That is Sunday morning at 10 a.m. And if you want a link, this is on Zoom, just go to allsoulskc.org. Labor Notes is doing online steward workshops. And this one, the next upcoming one, is Using Grievances to Organize. Monday, December 6th. 7 to 8:30 p.m. That may be Eastern Time. Check it out. To register, go to labornotes.org and click on events. Jobs with Justice's year-end virtual celebration is Wednesday, December 8th, 6 to 7 p.m. You can register by going to the Missouri Jobs with Justice webpage. There's lots of swag. You can outfit yourself for a whole year in great JWJ t-shirts and mugs and all sorts of things. And the third Saturday Wyandotte County Democratic Breakfast will be December 18th. Speaker will be announced. That's it for tonight's Heartland Labor Forum. Tune in next week. The show's going to be Amazon again and the Battle of Blair Mountain. The Heartland Labor Forum is a member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. Check out the rich diversity of programming related to workers and unions at laborradionetwork.org. Thanks to tonight's engineer, who did an awesome job, Jen Zaman. Heartland Labor Forum, a show by and about workers, our workplaces, and our labor movement. We are radio that talks back to the boss, and you can talk back too. Send us your workplace stories, news, and ideas for shows to heartlandlaborforumkkfi@gmail.com. Our website, where we archive shows and post our upcoming schedule, is heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here at 90.1 FM, KKFI.
Where you come from to struggle.